Welcome to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. You're listening to WCHL 97.9 FM, 1360 AM. Well, folks, this week, I guess it's just fitting that the show is called The Deep End because it feels like America just fell into it. And maybe not fell, but was actually pushed. It was kind of like you're standing around at a pool party and someone just runs up behind you and tosses you in, fully clothed, unexpected, and you're soaking wet. That's kind of like how I feel right now. And now I'm even more pleased that we call this The Deep End because I feel like we've all fallen into it. It's hard to imagine anything more surprising than the election results of this past Tuesday. And you know, I was like many of you. I had my fingers on my keyboard, refreshing various websites from 538.com and RealPolitics, Huffington Post, The Upshot with the New York Times, the Princeton Election Consortium, all of them. They were all, with varying degrees, all unanimous in predicting the outcome of last week's presidential election. And to a website, each of them was wrong, completely wrong. Professor Wong up in Princeton with the Princeton Election Consortium actually had Hillary Clinton winning the presidential race, or at least her odds of winning the presidential race, at 99%+. I actually had heard an interview with him where he believed it was 100% that Hillary was going to win. And, of course, by Wednesday, he was writing his "Oops, I got it wrong" web post. So I'm wondering how you're feeling. I know I'm feeling a little disjointed, like I've phased into an alternative universe, perhaps. The blue wall of states that was supposed to protect a Hillary presidency collapsed around her. We saw Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin fall. Those states were just only on the periphery of the conversation a week ago. Everyone was focused on Ohio, North Carolina, and Florida. And Kellyanne Conway and Donald Trump were running around the country saying those were secured and they were moving the ball forward. Many of us found that hard to believe, but today the reality of it all has set in, and President-elect Trump has now met with Obama and is preparing his transition into power. Other interesting things happened that I think many of us wouldn't have expected. Along with Trump winning those states, every single Senate race that was contested in this election went to the party of the presidential candidate that won that state's electoral votes. For the first time in direct election of senator history, that happened. So Wisconsin, Senator Johnson retained his seat. In Pennsylvania, Pat Toomey retained his seat. Here in North Carolina, Richard Burr retained his seat. That also, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise. Of course, the converse for the Democrats was true. Democratic challenger Hassan beat Senator Ayotte from New Hampshire. Hillary took those electoral votes. At least it appears she has. And a new senator from Illinois. We're going to be welcoming Senator Duckworth, who was formerly in the House, and she's going to be taking over that one. Of course, Hillary won Illinois handedly. So I thought it was a way to process this kind of shocking outcome. I'd bring my friend Jeff DeLuca back. If you listened last week, we were, like many pundits, predicting an overwhelming victory for Hillary Clinton. And I thought I'd bring him back and help us process what the heck happened. Welcome, Jeff. Glad to have you back.
Thanks, Mark.
So, Jeff, what the heck happened?
Well, I like the extension of the deep end metaphor, and to bring it into the 21st century, I'll say not only was I standing next to the pool fully clothed and got pushed in, but I had my cell phone in my pocket too.
Why was everyone so wrong? Why were we wrong last week when we talked?
I think Democrats completely underestimated the lack of enthusiasm among critical voting blocs. I think Donald Trump tapped into a very complicated web of anxieties that exist particularly in the Midwest. You look at the counties the whitest counties in the country, broke for Trump by 10 points more overall than they did for Romney. Folks who long called themselves Democrats or felt sympathetic to the Democratic Party have not felt heard and see the country changing in ways that they don't like, and they spoke up.
Actually, many of them just stayed silent, didn't they? I mean, in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, my understanding is that Trump didn't get any more votes than Romney did.
Right.
But Hillary Clinton's campaign was unable to come anywhere near the numbers that Obama was able to pull out of those states. Now, we didn't I don't think many of us expected her to get those kinds of numbers, Obama numbers. Mm-hmm. But to lose to someone who didn't even get as many votes as Romney, I think, was really shocking. That really shows a lack of enthusiasm in the Democratic base, don't you think?
Big time. And I think in Wisconsin, you're going to see some conversations. Votes are still being counted. Final counts are happening. But there's a lot of talk in Wisconsin in particular. You know, there were new voting restrictions this year. Voter ID in Wisconsin. This was the first election without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. Some of the margins in other states may have been too big for that to have had the determinative effect. But I think the story of this election is that there were breakdowns in pretty much every sector of the electorate that the Democrats just weren't prepared to make up for. I mean, the collapse of Hillary's support among white women in the last week of the election. I mean, that was really what turned this forward. And you know, we also do have to keep in mind Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote.
That's right.
Which, when you look at the map and how red it is kind of shocking. But you know, that's the way the Electoral College works in this country.
That's right. And Californians supported her in huge numbers. She really rolled up high numbers there. And then in red states, she actually performed a lot better in several red states than past Democratic challengers had.
Yes.
Like, for example, in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, those California and Texas numbers do nothing to influence the outcome of this race. And so she's able to pull a popular majority, or at least a popular vote win. She's not able to get over the line on the electoral votes.
Mm-hmm. As someone who grew up in Palm Beach County in 2000 and experienced that, this has brought back a lot of painful memories.
I'm sure it has. Well, there had been the presidential race wasn't the only one that kind of caught us off guard. It was the Republican wave across North Carolina was also surprising to a lot of folks. And so after this break, let's come back and talk a little bit about what happened here in North Carolina. And we're back. This is Mark Kleinschmidt, and you're listening to The Deep End on WCHL 97.9 FM, 1360 AM. And today I have my old friend Jeff DeLuca back. We did a pre-election show, and now we're doing a post-election show. I'm not going to call it an autopsy, but we're certainly trying to figure out what happened. We talked a little bit about the national race, the presidential race, but here in North Carolina, we had some surprises, too. Some long-serving members of the Council of State have now been turned out. Wayne Goodwin, our insurance commissioner, was the biggest shock to me. We made no headway on labor commissioner. Beth Woods holding on by the skin of her teeth. Then we saw some break at the top of the ticket. Attorney General candidate Josh Stein looks like he's going to win. He has a margin that doesn't look like it reaches down into the mandatory recount or even a requested recount measure, as long as the numbers hold this week. But then Cooper, with only a few thousand votes, may find himself in a precarious position. Jeff, I know you watched the legislature really closely. What happened there? Last week we were talking about the North Carolina House that might be able to have enough Democrats to prevent a supermajority. Did the Democrats achieve that?
Democrats did pick up four seats in the House. They did turn away four, or they did flip four seats. Unfortunately, they lost three of their own, and so we ended up netting a single pickup in the House, which is not going to be enough to overturn the veto-proof majority. And then I think even more surprisingly, we lost ground in the Senate. We actually lost a seat that I certainly didn't see coming. Where we lost, though, I think it kind of reflects the national sentiment in terms of the incumbents that were turned away. The two of the incumbent Democrats that lost, actually all three of the Democratic seats we lost were in white rural communities in North Carolina where Democrats have been strong in the past, but those communities are trending away. And
when we talk about veto-proof majorities, so we're saying that even if Roy Cooper is successful and holds on to this what apparent victory, that if he vetoes acts by the General Assembly, it won't be difficult for the General Assembly to override his veto.
Correct. Right? And that is going to matter very closely, because one thing you didn't mention, Mike Morgan won the North Carolina Supreme Court race for the Democrats. And today there is a rumor going around that the Republicans are going to try to add 2 seats on the North Carolina Supreme Court.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. You know, I heard that rumor recently as well, and it made me go back to the North Carolina Constitution, because at first I was unsure whether that's something the legislature could do. And of course, the Constitution says yes, the legislature can do that. The Constitution says that the North Carolina Constitution says that our Supreme Court shall have a Chief Justice and 6 associate justices, but gives the General Assembly the power to add 2 more to it. And that's what we're seeing now in the press today here on Friday, the 11th of November, that they're considering doing that even before Roy Cooper becomes governor, is what I understand, so that Governor McCrory could actually fill those 2 vacancies. Well, what does that mean to the people of North Carolina? Why should we have any concern about that?
Well, there was a lot of excitement on Wednesday morning when it felt like we were actually going to control 2 of the 3 branches of government as long as Cooper's margin holds through the recount. And we have had important redistricting decisions and voting rights decisions happening at the North Carolina Supreme Court. It's really critical for Democrats that we hold on to that if we can.
Right. And holding on to it, you know, it looks much more precarious. I mean, so not only is General Assembly thinking about adding 2 seats, but Cooper's lead over McCrory right now holds at 0.11%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still up in the air. Well, I guess we'll know more on Friday the 18th when counties certify their votes, and then the candidates get to decide if they're going to have they're going to ask for recounts. Now, you mentioned the Supreme Court race. It was a bloodbath for Democrats in the Court of Appeals. It looks like Republicans won every single one of those contested races, didn't they?
I think so. I think that's correct.
I think the closest one was Linda Stevens, who's been serving actually every lawyer in North Carolina that I know, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter their political affiliation, just holds Linda Stevens in the highest esteem. But she was upset by our Senate Majority Leader Phil Berger's son, Phil Berger Jr. There was a lot of talk earlier this year because Senator Berger made sure that the law was passed to make sure his son's name appeared ahead of Linda Stevens on the ballot.
Yep.
And it looked like he got what he wanted. So what we saw, we were all concerned about that kind of political machination that occurred to make that happen, and now we thought, well, how could they be worse? But now they're going to maybe let's stack the court and make sure that they get a Supreme Court that will endorse their own, you know, their own policy initiatives. Well, there's a lot at risk here in North Carolina. There's a lot of risk nationally with both houses of Congress and the White House going to be in Republican hands. What do you think some of the first things that we're going to see change in 2017, what do you understand that the Republicans' agenda, either at the federal level or the here at the state level, is?
Repeal of Obamacare. That sounds like something they're going to try and move on. I think it's going to be a little more complicated than the many symbolic votes they've taken in the past, because I think now that there's consequences,
right,
for a lot of people. So they're going to have to decide whether repeal and replace means do that at the same time, and we'll have to see what kind of organizing happens around that.
I'm hearing they may set a date sometime in the future for a repeal.
2-year sunset, like that.
To give them time to come up with another plan. That it's hard to imagine being any more making sure people have insurance available than the ACA.
Yeah, and watch our newly reelected Senator Richard Burr. His voice has been very important to healthcare policy on the Republican side in the Senate. In addition to that, you know, all these conciliatory notes that Democratic leadership has sent, one of those includes a letter Nancy Pelosi or a statement she put out saying that she wants to work with the Trump administration on an infrastructure bill.
Well, that's one thing that I've heard Trump talk about that I think a lot of us could actually be really excited about. you know, he spoke on the trail about the about America's infrastructure, and that's the core of his jobs plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was at least in terms of rhetoric and aspiration, that was one of the few issues where the two sides in this in this campaign kind of agreed. My question is whether Paul Ryan allows it to happen.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that after this break. You're listening to WCHL. I'm Mark Kleinschmidt, and this is The Deep End. Welcome back to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. I'm here with my friend Jeff DeLuca, and we've been talking about some of the changes that we expect to see after the turn of the year. What is this new Trump administration going to focus on? We've talked about Obamacare, of course. One of the things I'm concerned about is this interest that the president-elect has stated many, many times, which is overturning every executive order that Obama has issued over the last several years. And that looks to affect immigration policy and, you know, close to my heart, and I know yours too, Jeff, LGBT issues and protections for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, and particularly like the Justice Department's interpretation of statutes that have actually been really instrumental in helping advance the cause. I mean, it was just a few months ago when Attorney General Loretta Lynch gave an often quoted speech directly to the transgender community in response to HB2, where she said that the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, the entire Obama administration stands with you. That's what she told the transgender community. And now we have a president whose running mate was the governor of Indiana, who's probably – it's been called by many to be one of the most anti-LGBT politicians in the country, who is actually – I think when he ran for Congress back in 2000, proposed that HIV/AIDS funding actually be converted – to conversion therapy to help people not be gay and lesbian.
Yes.
I mean, that's how far – that's a big change, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or at least have the funding tied to it. Like there's a – you look at Trump's transition team and who he's putting on that. The leadership of his domestic policy team is a man named Ken Blackwell, former mm-hmm. Ohio Secretary of State, very virulently anti-LGBT, lost the Ohio governor's race I think in 06, but very prominent in social conservative circles. Ben Carson possibly for a Department of Education, which has huge implications for safe schools.
Sarah Palin, Department of Interior.
Yep. It's quite frightening.
It's going to be a new world we're going to live in. And, of mm-hmm. course, the things that President-elect has said during the campaign, the issues around the wall and the alienating effect that has on immigrants and mm-hmm. anyone of Latino heritage. The Muslim ban, how we don't have no idea how that's going to play out, and even the conversation around that and how it makes people who actually don't subscribe to the dominant Protestant Christian religious ethos. I mean, how alienating it is just to come out and target any group of people because of their religion. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't even touched on that. But the Democrats themselves, I think they look like they're flailing. It's only been a few days. There's a lack of organization. Right now, the Democratic National Committee has an interim chair, Donna Brazile, who herself came under fire during the campaign. She's obviously not going to be able to stay in that race. I think you have some news about what they may do at the top.
Yeah. So there are two contenders who have thrown in their hats publicly. Former DNC chair Howard Dean.
Who a lot of people credit with getting Obama elected in 2008.
Yeah. And certainly the majorities in 06. He was pro 50 state strategy. I really liked him. Unfortunately, he, for his progressive base, he backed Hillary. He's been a lobbyist for healthcare companies. And so there's been a lot of ideas that out there that maybe he's unacceptable to particularly the Bernie wing of the party, which I work with.
And so if he's unacceptable, then who the alternative?
So emerging is Congressman Keith Ellison, black Muslim from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, Chuck Schumer, who is probably going to be the Senate Democratic leader, very close to the Clinton camp, has thrown his support publicly behind Keith Ellison.
Wow. Now, that's a hugely symbolic move, I think, that the Democrats could take and actually help kind of rein in the activist population, the activist core of the party. And if they're going to have a future after this, and we aren't just going to be sitting around wringing our hands, to have to make some big moves. Jeff, thanks so much for being here today and helping us deconstruct what happened over the last week. We'll be back next week. This is The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.